Your work life, all of our work lives. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko.
When you've done a career show for 28 and a half years, you become very concerned about saying same old, and just even as a consumer of career information, I've been a career counselor to 5,300 clients, I've read so much, it tends to be old wine in new bottles. So today's show in particular is my attempt to ensure, help ensure, a measure of freshness without just being new for its own sake. I've assembled a list of 11 career concepts that are not conventional wisdom, that in fact are contrarian to conventional wisdom. And they are, I've got three or four about how to choose a career, I've got three or four about how to find good work, land the job, and three or four about how to do well on the job. And as usual, I will invite you to call in if you've got a question about your own work life. That's really job one here. I work with Marty Nemko and KALW. We call them workovers, but there's usually no pummeling involved. So in just a few minutes, I'll give out the phone number, and you can call in and hopefully get some advice about your career issue or someone you love. Anyway, the first set of these contrarian career concepts is about choosing a career. It needn't be that complicated. For example, there is no need to take the two major inventories that get sold all the time, the strong interest inventory. And I need to explain why. One's interests map insufficiently with one's skills and with job availability. I mean, we're all interested in, you know, the environment. We're interested in sports or broadcasting or fashion or whatever. But it doesn't mean because we're interested that we have an appropriate skill set that would likely get us a decent paying job. And, of course, interests tend to map inversely correlated with job availability because most people's interests do cluster in the same areas because, especially here in the Bay Area, everybody seems to be an environmentalist. Well, so is everybody else. And so the job, you know, they get dozens if not hundreds of applications for every non-volunteer job or a job that pays more than $15 an hour. So the strong interest inventory, which is considered the gold standard of career tests, is really very often it misdirects you to something that either is you may be interested in it but you don't have the skills, or the job market is so tough that you're just, you know, in delusional land. That's why so many people make fun of career counselors. Because they live by the dream it, you can do it philosophy, which sounds great and it's encouraging, but it doesn't necessarily match reality, which in the end, it's only reality that's going to pay, you know, put money enough in your bank account to pay the crazy Bay Area rents. Nor need one take the Myers-Briggs type indicator. People love it because it is the holy grail. You get your personality divided into one of 16 categories. You're an ESTP, you're an INTJ or whatever. The problem is it has shockingly poor predictive validity. And that's what we care about, predictive validity. To what extent would those four letters, you know, ENTP, predict how well you do it at work or in your personal life or whatever? And it's shockingly terrible. Nor need you harangue people until they give you the vaunted informational interview. We've overheard, you know, vomitiously that, you know, before choosing a career, you should have an informational interview. That's foolish on two major grounds. Number one, it has always been foolish because an N of one person could love their career, hate their career. The environment that he or she is working in could be anomalous. And the second reason is a more recent one. Because it has been so often touted that you should get informational interviews, everybody's overwhelmed. People are busier than ever, and at the same time, more and more people are wanting to get informational interviews. The answer, what ends up happening? You get the usual response, which is no response or rejection. And even if you get an acceptance, big deal. That's just, like I said, an N of one, which tells you nothing. That's what you shouldn't do. That's the complications that can be avoided. Well, here is what's simply enough. It's usually enough in choosing a career to spend maybe just an hour browsing the 250 careers profiled on a website called the Occupational Outlook Handbook, which is available free online. Occupational Outlook Handbook. Google it. Or the 350 careers profiled in my just-published book, Careers for Dummies. Now, I want to be as fair-minded as I can be. There are advantages to both. The Occupational Outlook Handbook is awesome because it has, they have an enormous staff of 500 people who did the research on each of those careers. And it is very clearly and authoritatively written. But the problem is, because it's a very, it's not just a neutral body, but they get their data from predominantly from the professional associations in each career, they tend to hear mainly the positives. So when you read about the careers in the Occupational Outlook Handbook, you're going to be getting a somewhat slanted to positive view. And we all know in every career there are pros and cons. My book has a disadvantage, Careers for Dummies, of being, hey, it was just me, although I've had 5,400 clients and I'm obsessive about learning about careers, I'm still one guy. And so that's a huge disadvantage. But the advantage is twofold. I have the luxury of being able to be more subjective. I have no vested interest in puffing a career or denigrating a career. So you're getting a more balanced look. And because I know that at this initial stage when people are searching for careers, they don't want to spend a lot of time reading about any given career for starters. And the Occupational Outlook Handbook is dense, probably 1,000 very dense, very sober, very professional language writing, where mine tends, each of my, what I call dossiers, tend to be 200, 300 words in very punchy language, so you're actually motivated to keep reading. So you can see there is advantages, really honest advantages, to looking at both the Occupational Outlook Handbook and the 350 in my book, just published, Careers for Dummies, and that you can do in an hour or two. You don't have to read about all the careers. You scan a table of contents. And in my book, for example, I divide them into categories where, you know, I have a separate section for word-centric careers, people-centric careers, science, technology careers, entrepreneurial careers, office detail careers. And so you can hone in amazingly quickly and get more information of quality than you would with an informational interview much faster. Then, once, let's say, you've identified 2, 3, 5 careers from either the Occupational Outlook Handbook or Careers for Dummies, you can filter them easily on whether they use your core attribute or two. Are you a word person primarily? Are you a people person primarily? Are you a STEM person, that is science, technology, engineering, math primarily? Are you entrepreneurial self-employment type? Are you an office detail person, somebody who might do well with accounting or bookkeeping or computer programming? Right? That's an important filter in terms of what your core skill and interest is, the intersection of interest and skill. And then, next, all you really need to do to be way ahead of most job seekers is to do a Google search on the prospective career. Let's say you're interested in political careers. Just Google that. And don't forget about the videos, because most people end up being more compelled by what we see than what we just read in text. And there are tons of videos out there on nearly every imaginable career. Just do that, which can be done amazingly quickly without spending on career counselors or long, you know, treks to Nepal to find enlightenment. Very often you are more likely to choose a career that will leave you satisfied than do certainly the vast majority of people. So, contrarian career concept number one, choosing needn't be that complicated. And I'm saying forget about the complications such as a strong interest inventory, the Myers-Briggs, informational interviews. I think I'm going to give out the phone number at this point. If you're listening to Work with Marty Nemco, I am offering career concepts that are kind of contrarian. But whatever, I'm not just going to be contrarian, and I never am. But when I legitimately feel that way, I make particular effort to bring that up because standard advice is often heard. What you don't need to hear is same old, same old. But if you want customized advice for you now, that's what I do on this is my pro bono work here at KALW. If you have a work-related problem or somebody you love, either because you're unemployed or well-employed but still unhappy, whether you're 16 or 76, whether you're in the nonprofit world, the entrepreneurial self-employment world, for-profit, government, the common denominator is simply that you're unhappy related to something to do with work. I'd be happy to try to help you out. The phone number here at Work with Marty Nemco and KALW, 415.
This is an encore presentation of Work with Marty Nemco, so we aren't taking phone calls during this hour. 4134.
And going back now to those some of these contrarian career concepts, Nonprofits are very often seen as the holy grail place of employment, especially here in the Bay Area. But at least among the 50 former clients I've had, of whom probably 20% either are working or have worked for nonprofits, they are particularly likely to treat workers poorly. And that's ironic, of course, because nonprofits often proclaim to care about workers, and yet they liberally use volunteers, they liberally use low-pay workers and expect them to work long hours because they believe in the cause, and once they are on the job, nonprofits have, in general, it varies, but nonprofits are very much into collaboration, consensus, lack of hierarchy, and so in many nonprofits, not all, there are endless processes, endless strategic planning meetings, brainstorming sessions, consensus developing, and that can be very frustrating because things just go slowly. There is tremendous needs that the nonprofit sector is trying to address, and in the meantime, we're messing around with all this process, and then there's also a lot of administration because money is the lifeblood of a nonprofit. Tremendous amount of the human effort goes into fundraising, and that ends up being not the reason that you entered the field. And one more frustration is, and again, there's many exceptions, but many nonprofits are very top-heavy. In other words, most of the money goes to the development director, the executive director, the assistant director, and everybody else gets paid crap. And so there is this feeling of resentment where, you know, the worker bees are killing themselves, and in these supposed nonprofits that are supposed to be very egalitarian and non-hierarchical and let's treat people more equally, there tends to be an enormous gap between the largely volunteer or very low-paid jobs that the worker bees in nonprofits get, and then the executive director, the fundraising director, etc. So I would invite you, even if you have nonprofit sensibilities, to not viscerally, not reflexively go the nonprofit route. There are certainly government agencies which offer much more full-time benefited jobs that will have many similar missions to nonprofits. And there are for-profit companies, especially here in the Bay Area, that have a, let's just call it a pro-social mission, both within their foundations and even within the mainstream of the business. So that's the second contrarian career concept, that nonprofits, surprisingly, are particularly likely to treat workers poorly, so you should look askance. I'll give out the phone number again. If you or someone you care about has got a work-related problem, the phone number, 415-841.
This is a pre-recorded program, and we are not taking phone calls at this time.
I do workovers on KALW, 415-841-4134. And now, let's go to the phones. Welcome to the show. It is your turn on the air. How can I help you? Hello?
Hi, Marty.
Hi.
My name is Rachel. I currently work in sales for a additive manufacturing technology, which is a fancy word for 3D printing.
Okay.
So it's kind of a niche sales market in a sense that not a lot of salespeople have that type of technical background.
Mm-hmm.
It's my first sales job, and I found myself being fairly successful and finding a lot of new skills, but it's extremely stressful, and I don't think I could do it all of my life. I don't think I could do it long term, and so I'm kind of just starting to think about the 5-year, the 10-year plan, and I wanted advice on what's a good career move after this, say in 5 years, to something that is still in the field, because I have some really great technical knowledge that not a lot of people have, but that is just less stressful, and my paycheck isn't dependent, day to day on my personal, sale.
On commissions. Great. So tell me, what is the main source of the stress in your job currently? Is it the commission? Is it having to make your quota, make your number kind of thing, or is it something else?
No, I'm actually pretty successful, so I don't have stress over how much income I'm going to get, but it's more just the volume of work, and then just customer relations. You know, it seems like customer-facing people end up getting the brunt of everything that's wrong, and very rarely get, customers saying, "Oh, I love, what I got." Usually, if someone's happy, they won't say anything. So It's really just the fact that, you know, I often have to face the brunt of someone who's really frustrated, and then just that I feel very overwhelmed just with the amount of responsibility that I have.
Right. You're the flak jacket for the company. That's why customer service tends to be a crappy job, and it sounds like it's a significant component. So couple of thoughts. I'm going to give you, I like to do multiple choice, so I'm going to give you a number of solutions. You tell me which, if any, feel right. I'm trying to bite at this a nibble at a time. Then we'll get to the long-term career change if we need it. But is the right answer to be more zen about it and recognize you can't solve all the problems, and if the company's products are so crappy that there's so many unhappy customers, do you need to get out of it? Either, you know, be more zen about it, or if the company's products are crap, then from ethical as well as self-preservation reasons, work for another company in your industry. Is that, we'll start there. To what extent does that feel on the money or off the money?
It's off the money. I actually really like the company that I work for a lot, and I really like the industry a lot.
Okay. So is it just it's a nature of the beast that that customer service is going to lead to you have a lot of complaining in your industry? Is that accurate?
Yeah, it's the nature of the beast, and I totally accept it, and I'm fine with it for now because I'm learning a lot of good skills, but I just don't see myself in it long term.
Okay. And so when you say you've got these technical skills, tell me a little more about the nature of the technical skills you have and which ones you want to use and not use in your next career.
Sure, yeah. So at least on the commercial side for 3D printing, it's this fairly newer technology, but it's really starting to become more ubiquitous in manufacturing, and a lot of people are starting to use it for production manufacturing. And mostly the reason why people don't right now is just the education factor. They just don't understand how it can be used for end-use parts. And so a big part of my job is educating engineers on how this can be used in replace of what they're currently doing in order to save them a lot of time and a lot of money.
Okay. And are you currently working for a manufacturer said project, or are you for a VAR?
I don't know what a VAR is, but
value-added reseller, somebody who takes somebody else's manufactured product and provides service, installation, and customer support.
Oh, we do both.
Okay.
We do both.
And is there, I'm sure you have competitors. Do you, do the parts of the, is the part of the job you like the education function? The closing the deal function? I know you don't like the customer service. Which part of the job do you like and are good at?
I love the education portion. So okay. I went to school for more environmental education. Mm-hmm. So I find a lot of satisfaction out of that part. I also really enjoy learning all about the new technologies, that part of it, although I guess that goes along with education.
So do in either in your current job or your next one, do you want to focus on being a translator, being a translator of the technology, the company's technology, or even working for the overall industry as an explainer, whether it be actually creating explainer videos or being a live presenter? Do you want to make that a core part of your expertise, either within 3D printing space or something related or not related?
I think that would be nice. I would also like to add a little bit of management, and I would like not only management of people, but projects as well, so a little bit of project management.
Okay. So let's say we said that now you were talking about staying in your job for a few years. So what if I said, see the extent to which you can reallocate your time a little bit so that you're doing more of the education component and a little less of the customer service. For example, if you've got a lot of dealing with angry customers, there are companies now that do a better job on their websites of providing either great answers to common questions or getting other users to answer complaints so that you're not doing quite as much, at least of the basic stuff. So doing a little more of the education, seeing if you can get the website to get some of those trouble tickets converted into self-solutions or community solutions. And then when you've got a little bandwidth, going for, say, a PMI certification, a project management certification, so you've got that under your belt and can use that as a leverage into your next job. What do you think about that?
I have thought about a PMI certification. Do you have a recommendation for a good one to go with?
That's too granular, but I am a huge believer in the power in crowdsourcing. And so if you simply look at the PMI certifications and the word reviews, you Google that, you're going to see which ones have high user reviews. You know, not just two or three that are shills for the provider, but if there are 50 reviews and they're wild about it, fantastic. And so, you know, don't ever rely on one person. That's always a mistake because it's you know, it's anomalous. But the collective wisdom that exists on the internet for anything, whether I'm, you know, as silly as an item as this sounds like, I ran out of glass cleaner, you know, Windex stuff. And I simply, because I find it fun, I went and I simply looked glass cleaner reviews. And there's a wealth of reviews about all the newest products, the green products, whatever. And then they say, as it happens, Windex is the best. But I got the collective wisdom of hundreds of people in 1 minute by using the miracle of Google. So you could do the same thing about PMI certs.
Okay, that sounds good.
Okay, I appreciate you calling Work with Marty Nemko.
Thank you, Marty.
Take care.
Bye.
Give out the phone number again. That's what I do. These are workovers. It doesn't matter what the nature of the problem. The more interesting or the more anomalous, the better. You got a work problem? Phone number here, Work with Marty Nemko, for what I call a workover, 415.
This is an encore presentation. We are not taking phone calls during this hour.
4134. Let's go back to the phones. Welcome to the show. It is your turn on the air. How can I help you? Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
I don't need a workover, but I just wanted to mention that your contrarian advice is very, very good.
Thank you.
I listen to your show regularly, and there's some good stuff on there, but the things that you're talking about now really are things that people need to hear, I think.
Well, I'm very fortunate that I've had so much experience that I have something to share. Was there one particular thing that resonated especially with you?
Well, no, but, you know, in my experience, and I didn't do this on purpose, it might just be the part of my personality that's negative, maybe, that actually encouraged me to wind up like this and work for my benefit. But the advice that I've been giving to friends of mine who are looking to find a career is kind of negative, but I think it's something they need to hear, which is, you know, look into what is a high-paying industry, no matter what your interest is, whether or not you're interested in that industry or not. If you're working in that industry, the same job in another industry would probably pay less, you know, and it's the job that matters, not necessarily the industry as far as job satisfaction goes.
I like to provide a little nuance to that, which is, sometimes the after-tax difference in income is too small to justify it. But yes, there are, in every industry, there's such a wide range of jobs. Everything from sales to accounting to business development to government compliance regulation, etc. So yes, the old rule of what I call follow the money makes sense as long as you're not making ethical compromises or there's something you just so deeply believe in. I'm well aware that the KALW listenership tends to be very, very cause-driven. And so if there's somebody who's just, really cares tremendously about land conservancy, yes, it's overcrowded, but for me to tell them to go to high-tech or biotech because it pays more, or insurance or financial services, they're going to roll their eyes. So everything in life is nuance, and this is no exception.
Yeah, and so, and a lot of times in the industry, you may not think, an industry that you may think is not beneficial to society, there is a niche that actually is.
That's very true. And most things...
And also, the other thing that I thought that I think is good advice is to find an unglamorous job. Something that everybody hates to do, but you hate a little bit less than everybody else. I think it's really benefited me that I'm tolerant, and I'll do things that people may not want to do without hating it.
That's
my personality.
That's great. I'm going to also add some nuance to that, but I'm going to thank you for the call. Thanks a lot, and then after the nice words, he made two points that I want to add a little nuance to. He said, you know, that most industries have something beneficial, and that's really true to a certain extent. And so, like, let's say, for example, I'm not going to take something even like a for-profit thing like Apple. Everybody agrees that Apple, it's got benefit, and Amazon yields some benefit, and Google yields some benefit. But let's just take even a nut and bolt company, a company that's making nothing but nuts and bolts. As long as their nut and bolt is fairly priced, the service is great, they're selling they're not a ripoff, then you are adding value because nuts and bolts are used for positive ends everywhere in the world. So, yes, I think we have too narrow a definition of what benefit is. On the other hand, if you're working for a company, you know, and I'm going to be really honest here, whether it be alcohol or pot, I did a review of the literature on pot for Time magazine, and it is much more dangerous than the big tobacco advocates would have us believe. And I have been saying for years that it's big tobacco that's been behind the legalization movement, and it's now turning out I'm absolutely right. Big tobacco has bought up a bunch of the Canadian, because Canadian laws are more liberal. They've bought up a lot of the land. It's, you know, we didn't think when we were legalizing marijuana that we were supporting big tobacco, but we really are. But my point is that, you know, there are certain for-profit industries, whether it be something that's environmentally a nightmare or dangerous like alcohol or pot, certainly much more than we've been led to believe. There are many for-profit industries that we don't normally think of as beneficial, even if it's just a boring product, a boring computer chip or a boring whatever, even if it's a computer chip that just enables you to play your game a little with less pixelation or less, less herky-jerkiness. There is a benefit there. But it depends on how important the nature of the difference is to you. The other thing he said is, he says, you know, you should do a job you hate a little less. Well, you know, that, I don't know if I could go that far. If you're spending too much time at work to be doing something you just hate a little less than other people. So, like, I would not want to work in a sewage treatment plant. That smell really is pervasive, and it's all over your body, and maybe you hate it less than somebody else. You know, I'm grateful to the people who do work at sewage treatment plants, but I'm not sure I would recommend to a client who would equally find that disgusting, literally, to do it. So, in any case, let me go back to the phones again. Well, welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. It's your turn on the air. How can I help you?
Yeah, Marty, in your opinion, when is it time for entrepreneurship to strike out on your own?
Great question. It depends on the situation. So tell me a little bit about it. It always depends on what's called the opportunity cost. What happens if you don't? You know, what is, you know, if you, in the extreme, if you are been long-term unemployed, nobody wants you, you can't stand working for anybody else anyway, you have got a great, brilliant entrepreneurial idea, then it's a slam dunk. But it's very often not quite as black and white as that. So tell me about your situation.
High skill and high demand, which is IT, the tech field, and just doing a course over the years of doing it, watching so many people strike out on their own and be successful. As far as watching entities come on the scene with premature ideas I had maybe years ago, you know, and as you know, the tech industry is the fastest growing industry, and one of the fastest growing industries on earth, period. And so many opportunities.
Okay, I need to get specific, because IT is very, very broad. Do you have a specific idea of what you would actually do and what your target market would be?
Networking and service level, you know, as opposed to, you know, back end or process side, help desk, user support, desktop support, things of that nature.
You would be doing that, or you would be doing more of the installation front end with the hubs and router thing?
No, more on the service side.
Okay. So sometimes it doesn't matter what particular industry. I know somebody who does that for law firms. He works 2 days a week at one law firm, or I don't know, maybe he's got five of them, and he's just got his phone with him all the time. And it really helps because he's a former paralegal, so he understands that business. Is there a particular vertical market you'd go after so you have a market niche compared to your competitors, or no?
Well, no, not really. Basically, it would be more of a consulting thing, you know, to begin to start off, until I get a feel of, you know, exactly which direction to go in. It's so many various niches in the IT field. The gamut is so wide, it's really hard to really pinpoint, you know, an exact entry point or you know, point of execution.
I'm trying to make sure you get clients. So if you don't have an industry expertise, very often what is needed to jumpstart your business is connections. Forgetting about industry, do you have people who are in a position to hire you to be the tech support consultant, even on a part-time basis, or no?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. There's, again, it's very high demand, especially on the front end. You know, when I'm speaking of the service side, you know, every company, you know, not even every other company, okay. Every single company that has employees, you know, have users with day-to-day, you know, issues, things of that nature. And I found, you know, when I did
do the little research that I've done, I found that it's literally a bidding war. You know, help desk services are in such high demand. It's literally a bidding war. So, oh yes, the work is there. I mean, yeah.
Okay, then if the work is there, then I want to make sure you're paid well. But I would still invite you as the initial step to see if you want to do it and how you want to do it, to make a list of the five human beings who like and respect you the most and think who know about your chops, and ask them, to what extent are you in a position to hire or refer me, and then do a little bit of assessing of the job market, what the going rate is. It is a daily rate, is it an annual salary, and what kind of salary, and test the waters with your five best connections. And that may help you either define a niche, or if you don't need a niche, if there's such tremendous demand, it will help you price appropriately, set parameters around your work. You may say, you know what, I don't want to work, be woken up at 2 o'clock in the morning because the server is down. Or you could say, I don't care about that. I could pay double time for that if they'll let me do that. But you can define the parameters of your work by talking to the people who you know and like you already. Does that make sense?
It absolutely does. Thank you so very much, Marty.
It's my pleasure. I love when people call in, and it's my pleasure to have served you. Thanks for calling Work with Marty Nemco, and I wish you the best of luck.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Take care. All right, before I go back to the phones, we do have calls on the line, but I was offering contrarian career concepts, and it was kind of one of the callers to say he found those unusually valuable, so I'll offer one or two more, and then I'll go to the phone. So if you're waiting online to get on, waiting on the phone to get on the show, you will. Just give me a couple minutes. The next contrarian career concept is this. Most people think that the path to career happiness comes from the right job, the right boss, the right etc. Well, less so than you might think. Of course, a National Geographic photographer is going to be more likely to like their career more than an iron worker in a clanging factory. But there are plenty of unhappy people in cool careers, and plenty of happy people, or at least contented people, in mundane careers. Focusing on a cool career or a particularly well-paying career often is not worth the price. It's better to choose a career that has moderate workload, ethical boss, reasonable commute, good job security, learning opportunities, and those are easier to find in a not cool career because there's less competition. You go and compete for one of those nonprofit environmental jobs, you're going to be competing with half the East Bay. That's that. I'll do one more and then I'll go to the phones. I'll give out the phone number before I do some more tipping here, so to speak. If you have a work-related problem, the phone number here for Work Over at KLW, and the show is Work with Marty Nemco, 415-841-4134.
This is an encore presentation. We won't be taking phone calls during this hour.
The next contrarian career concept I want to share before we go to the phones is everybody always says, especially in the media, STEM, tech, go into tech, the future is tech. You know what? I need to be contrarian, and I'm not just doing it to be contrarian. It is risky. Yeah, software engineering's in demand, but it is not easy to get competent and stay competent. For example, I see day in and day out employers are rejecting graduates even of prestigious coding boot camps. They're saying they don't have sufficient skills from those boot camps. Those employers usually prefer to hire software engineers in the U.S. who have, 3-5 years experience, and those in Asia who, despite the language and cultural challenges, end up being better than some newbie who just came out. So you can see how competitive this field is in the supposed, wildly in-demand technology field. And remember, when you're choosing a career, you're not choosing it for this year. You're choosing a career for the arc, not your whole life, but the arc of 5 or 10 years. And I am certainly seeing that over certainly as I extrapolate from the last 10 years, ever more jobs where the work product can be sent over the internet are being being done in Asia. They are learning how to conquer some of those cultural barriers, not 100%. But when the hourly rate is 20% of what Americans get, they're going to do that, and that means that over the arc of your career, you're going to put all that effort to become this great programmer in Ruby and Python and React and all the rest of it, and then lo and behold, you'll find that the jobs aren't there unless you're really a rock star. It may be wiser to focus on high satisfaction careers that are offshore resistant, like a network administrator, like this guy was talking about. There you're going to need somebody who's going to do some hand-holding, walk over to the desk, fix the hubs and routers, et cetera. Robotic technician, not going to be over offshore. Dentist is not getting offshore. Haircutter, which is, you know, one of the more rewarding careers. Every satisfaction survey, job satisfaction survey, puts haircutter near the top. And yeah, counselor. There's certainly some remote work. I have right now over half of my clients see me by phone and Skype, even though most of them are in the Bay Area because the traffic is just impossible. Nobody can get to me anymore, even though I'm not far away. I'm on the Berkeley-Oakland border. But certainly still, most people are being more comfortable with a counselor of any sort, personal counselor, career counselor, whatever, who's not thousands of miles away, who understands the local culture, the local job market, etc. All right. Now, let's go to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko. It's your turn on the air. How can I help you?
Hi. Is it my turn?
It is.
Hi. I'm a 34-year-old mom. Mm-hmm. I'm pregnant with child number three, and I've been home for about 2 years, 2.5 years. Mm-hmm. But I'm sort of dying to get back to work.
Okay.
But right now, you know, having another one in a couple months is not the time.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm worried that I'm going to be out too long to get back, you know, back into the market and a market that I like, but also, you know, be a mom and have that time. So I'm just wondering, you know, so say I'm going to take at least another year out. You know, another thing was I could never find a job even when I had my first two that paid enough to pay the child care.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't
mm-hmm.
seem worth it at the time.
Mm-hmm.
The only reason I was working with my first two was to keep my resume going, even though it wasn't really financially worth it. So I'm hoping long term, you know, I can get back in it, and I want, you know, some sort of retirement and long term money saving plan. But for right now, I can't. Any tips for either, you know, keeping my foot in the door somewhere, or what I can do until I can go back?
Yep. The normally, if I put in a room 100 stay at home moms who have been out for 3 to 5 years, who want to go back. Unless their field is inordinately in demand, their first job back comes from somebody who knows them, usually a former stay-at-home mom themselves. We do live in an era of sisters help sisters. In the Me Too era, it really is about that kind of female-to-female networking. And so for that reason, as well as stay-at-home moms are going to be more likely to help each other, your first job out is much more likely to come from your network. Friends, former colleagues, whatever. Predominantly women. I can't, you know, it's never only women, but, you know, as I said, if I fill the room with 100 stay-at-home moms who were successfully employed after going back, maybe 70 of them would have gotten their first job back in through one of their sisters help sisters connections, and the other 30 would have gone back and gotten a piece of paper, whether it be a certificate, whether it be a master's degree or whatever, to freshen up their background, and so they didn't feel like they were just cleaning diapers the entire time, because it would be a tough sell in the interview process to try to explain why being a stay-at-home mom to three kids is not going to be a liability, because quietly, while it's illegal to ask, everybody, male or female, whoever's going to interview is going to say, hey, she's got three kids. We know where her first allegiance is. And why would they choose somebody male? They would much more likely choose somebody male or female who doesn't have three kids and whose allegiances are less split. So I would be, if you're really interested in getting back in, I would do one or both of those. I would systematically try to meet with, have coffee with, chat with, hike with, get drunk with, whatever, your girlfriends and former colleagues, as well as do some learning, whether it be, you know, because you're a stay-at-home mom, you got childcare issues. You know, there's a zillion online courses that are short courses in whatever it is that you want to learn. What's your field? Do you know what field you want to go back?
Sure. Yeah, I used to do medical research mostly at UCSF, and then health coach weight loss research in that area as well. So patient interaction is where I like to be, research, medical research, basically.
So I do a review. I would, you know, do a review of the literature on, you know, in the last 3 years, changes in approaches. And I know I teach at UCSF, so I know, you know, that everything is about underserved, quote, underserved, underserved, underserved. So doing a review of the literature on better methods for doing diabetes education or weight loss education in at-risk communities, you know, maybe even more specific to that, Native American communities or whatever, that can not only freshen your knowledge base, but it gives you something tangible to show when you're applying for a job. Does that make sense?
Okay, right. So I'm up to speed when I go speak with whomever.
Yep.
Great. Okay, those are some great tips. Thanks very much.
My pleasure. Thanks for calling Work with Marty Nemko.
Okay.
Okay, back to contrarian career concepts. What I've talked about so far were concepts in terms of choosing a career. But now let's say you've chosen one and you're looking for a job. First thing is, you know, most career counselors, let alone, and you know, self-improvement gurus and all the rest of them, tell you, dream it and you could do it. But they seem to fail to recognize a lot of the realities that you, that, well, one core superordinate reality, which is that you start a job search with a full tank of emotional gas. And every rejection or every no response burns some. You don't want to run out of gas before you've landed a job. Well, for example, seems like half my clients want to work for Google. Well, Google gets 4,000 resumes a week, and they hire 1 out of 800, 1 out of 1,000 from that strong pool. Before you go and apply to Google, I need you to put yourself in Google's shoes. How likely are you to be number one of 800 applicants? Or unless, I mean, obviously, if you have a tremendous in and you're sleeping with some higher up there who's going to hire you at Google, then all bets are off. That's a whole other story. But other than that, ask yourself, is it worth using that emotional gas to not only the task of writing the application, and then it's the waiting and waiting, and maybe you'll get an interview. But normally these days, because every employer is terrified of making a bad hire and then they can't get rid of them, wrongful termination suits, so they have three, four, five rounds of interviews. Each one preparing for it is stressful. Going is stressful. In there is stressful. Waiting for the response is stressful. My question is, do you have to ask yourself, before you apply to the designer label company, whether it be Facebook or Amazon or Apple or Google, you need to ask yourself, is that use of emotional gas likely to be worth it? Right? Let's go to the phones. I'll give out the phone number again. If you or someone you care about has got a work problem, I'm here to help you. Do we do workovers here? I don't like it. I do workovers here on KLW. I work with Marty Namco. The phone number, 415.
This is an encore presentation, and we are not taking phone calls during this hour.
4134. And back to the phones. You're on the air. How can I help you? Hello.
Oh, hello. Is that me?
It is.
Oh, super. Well, I work in clinical medical position at University Hospital, and I just have a question if this is accurate or not in your experience. You know, in private practice, the physicians would be making high salaries, feeling very well compensated, and my experience is that they deal better with their staff and kind of more direct, transparent communication. And it seems in the university setting, this is, I've worked outside of the state as well, in similar university and private practice, that because they're not getting compensated as they feel they should, and, you know, that knowledge becomes power, and the kind of, there becomes a lot of secretness. There's lack of transparency, lack of, like, good keeping people posted with what's going on, and then, boom, they'll kind of tell you, but there's just all these secrets, and because that seems to be where the power is, since it's not in the salary and compensation. Does that make sense, or is that maybe just the place where I'm at?
I think it's just the place you're at. I've seen it, you know, the docs at UCSF, at least, you're not at UCSF, but University Hospital, is that at UCSF you're talking about?
Well, I would never say.
Yeah, anyway, they're allowed to keep their private practices. So they're making money on their private practice and they get paid reasonably well. I don't think that's the explanation. I don't shed any tears for the docs at UCSF. They've got a really wonderful job because they get to do some of their clinical medicine, they get to do some of their research, they get to do some teaching. It's a pretty cool life. I can't complain.
Well, I think this would be more speaking to a county hospital, not
UCSF. Oh, I see. Okay. All right, fine. I think it really does vary with the situation. I can't speak to, you know, I have no reason to doubt what you're saying. So if, you know, that can be true or not true. I have had a number of clients who are both doctors and office managers at small five doc, you know, little practices. And they vary in terms of how, you know, the culture is going to vary enormously. But the more interesting question is you. So Or is your situation one where you need to stay put and you need to figure out how to make the most of it, or do you want to get out? What's your thoughts?
I prefer to stay. I mean, I'm overall pretty happy there, and I have a lot of independence. There's certainly definitely challenges, but I think overall I prefer to stay. I just wish that, you know, they could communicate better, even if they don't know what's coming up for a certain situation. I just think it's better to say, you know, we're not quite clear. We're working on a solution for X, Y, or Z. We'll keep everyone posted. You know, you could still say nothing, but it conveys that everyone's involved and part of the process.
So the question is, which of the following feels more realistic and desirable in your case? Do you need to make an individual query to somebody you trust who's in power to keep you more in the loop, because it may be more hassle than it's worth to keep everybody in the loop? Do you need to just accept that, you know, you have to live with that level of ambiguity? Which of those two feels more right?
I think I just have to live with the level of ambiguity.
I think so, and look for the other joys in the work, whether it's, you know, you said clinical medicine. Are you a nurse, a doctor? What are you?
Non-physician provider.
Okay, fine. So, you know, if you take, it's easy for me to say in the comfort of this nice little studio that I'm in, but, you know, find the joy of, you know, be this gratitude notion. I'm not a Christian, but the notion of Christian gratitude is a good one. If you basically like the job, but you're not liking the communication flow, but you do like the patients, you do like the commute, you do like some of your friends who work there, try to find sufficient pleasure to put like a balm, like Vaseline, on that little wound of not getting enough communication. And if it's not just you who's being, is it just you who's left out of the loop, or is everybody left out of the loop who's an underling?
Pretty much, from my conversations, everybody is left out of this particular situation. However, you know, it is multicultural. There's multiple languages.
Yeah.
So I do, and I don't, I have another language, but it's not one that anyone there speaks. And so you do see, like, people, administrative people, along with technical and clinical people pairing up.
Yep.
And
I've seen
I'm
that.
Imagining in their own language, they are sharing different things about what's going on.
I have seen that again. I remember most vividly, it was a Filipino workplace that was largely Filipino, and this woman was white. And they would talk in Tagalog with each other in the break room, and there would be this whole little covey. And then I had this other woman who worked for a government, and she was also white, and it was a largely African American thing. And there's a lot. We say we celebrate diversity, and in some places we do, some workplaces, but in many cases there is a lot of self segregation. I'll never forget being at Berkeley High School visiting, and that is the bastion of diversity, and yet they actually marked off in chalk. This is little China. This is little Africa.
Oh my God.
Yeah, you know, it's very easy to say words like celebrate diversity, but it is, sometimes it works beautifully, and other times it not. And if so, what's going on is, in your workplace, if there is this separation by race, that's too tough to tackle. That's even more, if that's part of the reason you're not in the information flow, that's even more the reason to not even try to buck that, because that's just too big a thing to, you know, for one person to try to tackle. I would look to the gratitude solution here based on what you said to me. Does that make sense?
Yes, that does. And I think I just try and focus more on inclusion rather than diversity, because I think diversity, I know it's a hot potato, but I feel like that terminology actually creates more separateness.
The word inclusiveness is now more considered, but in practice, de facto, it ends up being functionally the same thing. But not everybody is included. I think if you listen to this show today, and certainly over the years, there's very little that stumps me, but I am not capable enough to have come up to the solutions of the racial tensions that do exist in today's workplace, and I find accelerating. So that's just out of my, as they say, it's beyond my pay grade. I just am not capable enough to know the answer to that one. That's beyond me.
Well, I'm going to just follow your advice. I think that's the best, is gratitude and, you know,
okay.
Focus on the goal. Thank you so much.
Okay, you're welcome. Thanks for calling Work with Marty Nemko. Before I go back to the phones, I do want to get to a couple more of these contrarian career concepts. So if you're on the line, well, I'll try to get to you. So I'm only going to do a couple more of these. So another contrarian career concept in terms of landing jobs. Everybody always says the three keys to getting a job is networking, networking, networking. Wrong. It's not for everyone. Again, it lacks nuance. There's a new book just came out by Dawn Marie Graham. The book is called Switchers for Career Changers. And I'm quoting her. She writes, "For switchers, networking is absolutely necessary," end quote. But most people who buy a career guide, let alone hire a career counselor, usually have tried networking a ton to no avail. They may have even worked to improve their networking, but still lack that je ne sais quoi, whatever it is. They're either too intense like me, or they're not physically attractive. We all, unfortunately, we're a look at species, or we're not glib, we're not quick on our feet. But for whatever reason, networking has not worked. Or their skill set are just not bright. We're not allowed to say these words anymore. Let's say they're just not bright, so they don't come off as being somebody we'd say, oh, yeah, I really want to go to the mat for this person to help them get a job. So if such people, especially if their career changes and they're trying to get a decent job in a new field where they don't have experience or a new function in the same field, you know, if such people follow the standard advice to network, 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 too many of them are going to end up joining the millions of underemployed and unemployed people, even though we are at the historic lows of unemployment, 3.8%, this just came out, the lowest in 18 years. You would, you know, if you've tried networking a lot and it hasn't worked, and do more of it, you're going to more likely use some more of that emotional gas and run out of gas and join the millions of underemployed and unemployed people who've given up looking for decent paying work. For those people, answering ads is an underrated technique, especially for those poor networkers. For such people, taking the time to write quality applications is going to trump additional networking. Let's go back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko. It's your turn on the air. How can I help you?
Hello.
Hi.
Marty, you've given a lot of sage advice, but
one
I heard tonight tops them all. Sleep with, seduce and sleep with as many people as you can at the top. That's the golden ticket, Marty.
It's unfortunate, but it's, you know, in the era of Me
Why
Too.
Didn't you tell us before?
Well, you know, I know you may be half joking, but the truth is there was a study done about 5 years ago that 64% of women who slept with their bosses got promotions.
I'm sure that's
because,
oh my God, I can't believe we're even talking about this.
I try to be candid. Because, you know, in this era of Me Too, it's anathema, but the reality is you would think about it. Because there is such a threat of a lawsuit for power imbalance or whatever, and especially in the Me Too movement, if a boss is stupid enough to sleep with their supervisee,
yeah, exactly.
They're screwed. They've lost the power to make rational judgments about who to hire, who not just even hire, but whom to give plum assignments to, who to get to go to Hawaii on the training. So unfortunately, much as I lament it, it's unfortunately the reality of we're human beings. We're not robots.
You know, I have to say, there were times when you lost me and I stopped listening to you, but this is exactly the kind of show you should be doing all the time. You're firing on all cylinders tonight, Marty.
Thank you. You know,
I appreciate it.
And some of this does come from listener feedback. I'm always listening. My listeners say they enjoy the show when I have no guests more than when I'm interviewing a guest.
Yeah.
And so I'm still having guests.
Definitely.
When I can get a really good guest, but I've raised the bar. The guest to get on the show has got to be great, and if not, I'll do a no-guest show.
Right on.
Anyway.
Keep up the good work.
I appreciate your kind call. Thanks. Let's take one more call. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko. It's your turn on the air. How can I help you?
Hello, am I on?
Hi, you are.
Hi, I recently transitioned jobs. And so I had to negotiate salaries.
Mm-hmm.
So looking forward to the next time I have to do this,
right.
What are your tips, ideas? One thing that happened during my process is I was able to ask very candidly what the highest pay value that they were available to offer that position was.
Mm-hmm.
And if they give me that number, is that kind of just a hint that says that's the number I should be looking at, or...
Well, first of all,
you know,
that's certainly a data point, but you normally want to, you don't know if they're telling the truth or not. But what you really want to do is do your research up front. And sometimes you can, you know, in some work, I have a client who works for a major law firm, and their corporate policy is to make all of the salaries public, so everybody knows what everybody else is making. So to do that research up front, so, you know, in that case, will be helpful. But sometimes there are salary surveys that are put out by the professional association in your industry. Sometimes it's just asking your peers. But doing some research, whether it be internet research or personal research, to try to get a sense of what the range of pay is. You know, there's these websites like payscale.com and glassdoor.com and salary.com that list, you know, zip code adjusted pay for certain, for many, many fields. So a combination of that research can give you a good sense of what the range is. But I am always stressing the non-cash components to a salary offer, because if you get an extra $20,000, given we are in the state of California, we have the highest tax rate in the nation. So between federal, state, FICA, Medicare, Medi-Cal, workers' comp, etc., you're going to lose over half of that top dollar, because those last $20,000 are taxed at your top rate. And so I'm urging you, instead of, and the company gets no benefit. They give you 20 grand and they get nothing for it. So I'm often encouraging people, rather than to fight like hell for that last 20 grand or 10 grand or whatever, to focus more on non-cash benefits, which could include job description change, who you report to, whether you can telecommute, because the commuting is just getting crazier. You know, to go 10 miles, it could take you an hour and a half each way, and that burns you out, not to mention burns your car out. And mass transit, as good as it can be at times, doesn't often get you where from where you're home to where you need to go. So negotiating some of those other things, and not stock options, because for most companies that are certainly the non that aren't public, most stock options end up being worth zero. Everybody thinks big dollar signs, it's going to go public and they're going to make all this money. But I don't, unless we know that there's really a late stage, it's about to come company, and the company, everything you learn about the company is awesome, and you really think the stock's going to be worth a ton, I'd make that not your number one priority. And I also don't make vacation number one priority, because that makes them nervous about you. If your focus is on vacation, not so great. But if you ask for a training budget, you see, then they benefit, right? You're getting the benefit of learning. They're getting the benefit of a better trained person, and it's not taxable. So it's those non-cash components that are often more important than the salary. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. So assuming I can get an accurate depiction of what the pay scale range is, mm-hmm. how would you go about approaching that? I do actually ask a lot about non-cash options, but I also kind of want to maximize that once I get all the benefits I can get out of it.
Two approaches. There's two approaches, and it's a matter of feel which is right in that situation. The standard career counselor advice is you ask them, what is the salary range you've budgeted for the position? And you ask that at the right moment, which is right during the interview after you've answered the first question you've answered well, and they're smiling and nodding. You say, oh, by the way, what's the salary range that's been budgeted for the position? So that's one way to do it. The other way to do it is to be much more assertive. And I've had some clients this worked beautifully for them. They simply make a spreadsheet of all the data they have about salaries, and they make an adjustment based on their experience, what they bring to the table, how what they're going to do is going to add more value to the nonprofit or the company, and they lead with that and say, so it seems to me that 140 is the right salary, and maybe adding a little fudge factor, that puts them on the defensive and avoids them lowballing you. Does that make sense?
Yeah, so in that second type of situation, would you feel like if you did all that research and you had that prediction, and then let's say you just up that prediction a little bit to compensate mm-hmm. For something, if you go above their budget, how would you predict the company would react?
You don't to that? Be a pig. That's why you want to be. Everybody expects a little negotiating room, but not too much. So I would normally go 10-15% of what you think is fair to make your initial ask if you're making the ask. And I'm looking at the clock, and the show is over, so I'm going to have to thank you for the call.
Oh, okay. Thank you very much.
Take care. You're welcome. And that is Work with Marty Nemco for this week. I want to thank my board operator, Joanne Marr, and, of course, all of you for listening and calling in. Please join me again next Thursday at 7. You can call in for a workover, plus cool tech tools for your career. Until then, this is Marty Nemco reminding you that we find comfort among those who agree with us, growth among those who don't.